Every 3 years or so, we get the opportunity to see what the artists on the faculty of the Hope School of Fine Arts at Indiana University are doing without having to go to New York or Chicago or Amsterdam. After many years at the IU Art Museum, this year's faculty show is being presented at the Grunewald Gallery. Given that the work on view represents more than 30 faculty artists in 10 studio areas, the show is eclectic, to say the least. WFIU's Yael Cassander spoke with three exhibitors whose work demonstrates the shifting boundaries among the disciplines, along with the endurance of certain themes and ways of working.
You'll see paintings and photographs and ceramics and other objects you recognize in this year's faculty show. But the piece that confronts you as you enter the Grunewald Gallery doesn't get categorized so neatly within one medium.
It's a multimedia piece that includes screen printing, painting on canvas, and then this cardboard missile that's wrapped in spandex.
Chris Dacre's unorthodox piece is hard to ignore. As if a bright red missile rolled up in a screen print of playfully patterned aircraft weren't provocative enough, the sculpture incorporates an audio track on repeat play, offering some darkly ironic self-help.
The six steps of feeling better about yourself.
After a few minutes in the gallery, the cumulative effect of the monotonous narration emerging from the plunging missile is positively post-apocalyptic.
This is a really serious piece for me.
Dacre is a visiting faculty member in the printmaking area, whose connection to his work's martial iconography has a long history.
I was in the Air Force right after I got out of high school. I did 8 years. And I was actually 17 when I went in. I was very naive to a lot of things, obviously.
One assignment during his service involved the very object he's reproduced here.
I guarded these in North Dakota, intercontinental ballistic missiles. The U.S. has 5,113 of these nuclear warheads. Not all of them are ready to go. Russia has, I think it's around 11,000. And what's always interested me with these is how we show each other that we're disarming these. We kind of cut them in half and display them out in these open fields. Russia takes satellite imagery of these fields and says, oh, okay, well, they did what they said they would do. So you can cut them open, and then they're technically disarmed, but there's still a warhead laying around. And it could be fitted onto another fuselage and propelled up. And, you know, all you need is one of these missiles to be launched, and it's going to change everything, the way the rest of the world is for the rest of time.
A delivery system for that stark message, albeit a whimsical one. Dacre's piece is more bread and puppet than Rembrandt, although it incorporates screen printing. Etching, lithography, and woodcut are nowhere in evidence.
I do all those in my own work. So I print traditional prints on paper, frame them up, things like that. But I also print on canvas, on, you know, whatever I can kind of find and experiment with it and see if it works as well.
Exhibiting a piece like this in the faculty show makes manifest the advice he's always giving his students, who he's hoping will come see the show.
Don't just take printmaking and that's the only art class you ever take. Take sculpture, take ceramics, take whatever, and then bring all those together and find your own voice.
Dacre's senior colleague agrees that the show plays an important pedagogic role.
I mean, this is a research university. We're artists who teach, not teachers who do art.
Ed Bernstein is co-head of printmaking.
As a matter of fact, from my BFA seminar, I'm asking the students to interview other artists in this exhibition to find out more about them as artists rather than teachers.
The work the veteran faculty member is showing here emerges from a semester he spent away from IU.
I was a visiting scholar at the Universidade Federal de Minas Gerais in Belo Horizonte, Brazil, where I taught and did my own work in the fall of 2010.
Bernstein collaborated with his wife, Wendy, to produce an artist book of highly manipulated digital photo prints registering their impressions of the city.
The thing that was very startling to me when we first got there, that everybody lives behind walls. I remember when we first arrived, there were these walls with shard glass, you get barbed wire. I thought, oh my God, this thing is, you know, like a prison. And you go in behind these and there were beautiful gardens.
Although the book they created focused on the city's walls, gates, and entrances, which is also its title, the work eludes such strict divisions between media.
There was no barbed wire in front of here. This is all invented.
Bernstein manipulated photos to get what he wanted and introduced other materials.
This is a wall that actually was right by my house with shards of glass. And so what I did is I used photographs of skyscrapers and put them in each shard of glass. And then all of the bits here are all hand-colored. So that's all watercolor, and then there's pastel in the blue.
When it comes to the taxonomy of the arts, Bernstein's photo remixes are as slippery as Chris Daker's assemblage. But tackling a new medium or juggling several at once is nothing new for Bernstein. Take the work he was making just before this.
Well, I was doing these three-dimensional things, these flying kind of monsters are about 3 feet that were printed on fabric, and there were the different aspects of human being like hubris, pride, nemesis.
At the same time, he continues to make intaglio prints.
I mean, I did a whole series of prints called Tiepolo's Angels based on the Old Testament drawings of Domenico Tiepolo that have, they're just all traditional etching. So I do all of it. And it's really dictated by the image. You know, how do I make this? What's the best way of doing it? I don't decide, oh, I'm going to do this process and then make art about it. It's image over process.
The artist hopes that showing the new work might serve to illuminate his desultory path.
It would be interesting for students to see something about this place, how it informed me as an artist. I mean, travel, and I've traveled a lot, has been really important in my work, in developing my work. So when I went to visit this place, I reacted to what I saw there visually and also socially, and then made art about it. This, to me, is all about the difference between rich and poor. It's very political.
In its political engagement and its heterogeneity, Bernstein's work relates to Daker's. But Bernstein's social commentary also aligns his work with a couple of other pieces in the show that appear to represent a more formally cohesive body of work. Like Bernstein, Jeffrey Wolin, the Ruth N. Hall's professor of photography, has traveled extensively over the last couple of decades in the service of his art.
I've had to go to Vietnam to photograph Vietnamese war veterans. I've had to go to California or New York or wherever to photograph Holocaust survivors.
But the work he's engaged in now has brought him full circle. Wolin is back in Bloomington, revisiting subjects he first photographed in the late 80s.
Between, I would say, 1987 and 1991, I photographed on a very regular basis in the Crestmont, what's called Pigeon Hill, the housing projects on West 12th, 13th streets here in Bloomington.
Wolin's motivations were political as well as personal.
This is our microcosm of the country, you know. At the time, there was a crack cocaine epidemic across the country, and there was a lot of discussion about, is under the Reagan administration, about welfare and subsidized housing and drugs and crime. And I was interested on a personal level. My father grew up in just, you know, abject poverty in New York City, the child of immigrant parents.
With this sense of kinship, the photography professor insinuated himself into the lives of people who, although they lived 2 miles from Indiana University, may as well have been worlds away.
I was known as Picture Man. I would photograph regularly and go back and give them prints. And, you know, every apartment you went into, there'd be some of my portraits hanging.
In 1991, Wolin left Crestmont to spend the next 20 years photographing Holocaust survivors and Vietnam vets until he noticed a news item.
In the newspaper, in the HT, about a year ago, there was a picture of a woman who was missing. And then 2 weeks later, they discovered her body, and she was murdered. Her name was Crystal Grubb. And I saw this 29-year-old woman's picture in the paper, and I immediately recognized her as one of my subjects.
The connection lured Wolin back to Crestmont. He started teaching a photo class at the neighborhood Boys and Girls Club.
After class, I would go out into the neighborhood with my box of prints and show everybody I could find these photographs from 20 years ago. And it took a couple of months till I found the first person.
She has connected Wolin with many of his former subjects.
And so now I've photographed maybe 35 or 40 people that I had photographed originally 20 to 25 years ago.
Continuity provides cold comfort when the context is a housing project. But the continuity of Wolin's presentation, black and white portraits of the same subject standing in the same block, made over a 20-year interval, provides meaning in a way that only that abiding loyalty to a single medium could do. For WFIU, I'm Yael Cassander.
Works by faculty from Indiana University's Hope School of Fine Arts are on view at the Grunewald Gallery through Saturday, February the 11th. Images of works from the show may be seen on our website at wfiu.org/arts.